Welcome to the Media Line. I'm Lawrence Rifkin. Joining me is Tim Eaton, a Libya analyst at Chatham House, the London-based Royal Institute of International Affairs. Tim, a lot has been happening in war-torn Libya, where the Special United Nations mission now says that insurgents led by renegade General Khalifa Haftar and the UN-backed Government of National Accord have agreed to return to the peace table. Haftar's self-styled Libyan National Army, after a more than year-long offensive that saw it take key oil fields and a number of cities, recently retreated from positions around Tripoli. Is this what tipped the scales for the mediators?
As your question points out, there's been a significant shift in the balance of power on the ground, particularly since Turkish intervention has been stepped up from December 2019 onwards. This has led to the advance of GNA aligned forces in northwestern Libya, the capture of a significant base, the only air base for the Libyan Arab Armed Forces in western Libya, and also the pushback of front lines from the outskirts of Tripoli. So clearly, the discussion about entering back into negotiations over a ceasefire is going to be on very different terms this time round than on previous occasions where Haftar was in the ascendancy. I think the call for a ceasefire here, or discussions of a ceasefire, is therefore a result of the shift of power on the ground rather than anything done by the mediators, who have in fact proven themselves to have limited ability to impact the situation on the ground. Instead, those who support the warring actors directly and the Libyan actors that are fighting themselves are the ones that can really make a push and cut a deal. But again, we'll come back to the same old issue of what kind of deal can be done. And here, for the GNA, only a push back of Haftar's forces fully into eastern Libya will be acceptable. And for Haftar, this is likely to be a defeat that he cannot accept.
Several previous rounds of talks accomplished little. What, if anything, might change now?
As your question points out, recent negotiations for a ceasefire have achieved little. In fact, under UN auspices, largely Haftar's forces have gone and rejected all offers from the mediators and refused to accept a withdrawal from Tripoli. And of course, for the GNA, a ceasefire that leaves Haftar's forces in the near vicinity of Tripoli is always perceived as an opportunity for Haftar to retool his forces, rearm, and then launch a future offensive. So that's not acceptable either. This time, however, Haftar is on the back foot, so it'll be interesting to see whether he is actually willing to make any concessions in order to halt his forces' decline. I think that there is limited likelihood of this, however, because if you look at Haftar's negotiations in the past, he's been unwilling to sign deals. And on a number of occasions, he's made it seem like he was willing to sign and then walked away at the last moment. I believe that for the most part, Haftar's offensive on Tripoli will have to continue for him to be able to maintain his position and his prestige. As soon as that offensive falls, then a big part of his goals would be abandoned, namely the quest to control the whole of the country. Once that's proven beyond Haftar, then I think it becomes quite difficult for him to remain in place and for his forces to sustain themselves.
You are listening to Tim Eaton, a Libya analyst at Chatham House, the London-based Royal Institute of International Affairs. Haftar's forces seemed well entrenched around Tripoli, but the turning tide seemed to coincide with the arrival of Turkish troops, as well as pro-Turkey Syrian militiamen to assist the GNA. What role did these forces play in dislodging the LNA?
The course of the Libyan conflict since April 2019, when Haftar launched an offensive to capture Tripoli, has been in no small part determined by the support provided by external actors to the Libyan warring factions. In fact, if we were to look at this war in stages, we would see that Haftar's main advances in the first 6 months of the war came on the back of the intervention of Russian Wagner mercenaries and, of course, uptick in support from the United Arab Emirates to gain air superiority. And in contrast, when the GNA has moved forward, it has done so because of the support it's received from Turkey and, of course, a large number of Syrian mercenaries. We also hear reports now, of course, that Haftar's forces are also receiving large numbers of Syrian mercenaries. Increasingly, the high technological capability of the warring factions and the assets in the theater of war mean that it is that continuing support from external parties that determine the success of the Libyan actors on the battlefield. So without Turkish support, there is no way that the GNA would be in the position it's in today. By the same measure, it's unlikely that Haftar would have ever been able to have launched his offensive on Tripoli were it not for sustained Emirati and Egyptian support over the previous few years.
As for the LNA itself, recent satellite photos indicate the presence of fighter jets sent by Russia via Syria, according to the U.S. military, to help Haftar. What does this say about the way Moscow and Ankara view Libya?
Turkey appears to view opportunities in Libya on a number of fronts. Firstly, as the sole international backer of the GNA, or at least the only backer that has provided material support to the GNA's war effort, Turkey has significant leverage over the Libyan government. It's used this to sign a memorandum of understanding to support Turkish claims for drilling rights in the Eastern Mediterranean, a very key economic issue for Turkey. Similarly, Turkey seeks to guarantee its commercial interests in Libya and future contracts for things such as reconstruction. And of course, through its alliances and influence over actors in Tripoli, it hopes that a united Libyan government will act firmly in Turkish interests and not fall into the sphere of Emirati and Saudi interests. On the other side of the ledger, Russia has really hedged its bets over recent years, but clearly come out in favor of Eastern authorities through its support to Haftar and other Eastern-based authorities through things such as monetary support, i.e. the printing of money to keep the Eastern-based authorities' economy running. However, Russia seems to have supplanted the United Arab Emirates here, which had long been the key supporter of Khalifa Haftar. And in fact, it now appears that Russia will be the determinant of whether the Eastern-based authorities and Haftar are able to continue to prosecute an effective war effort. So that seems to be a shift, and it's likely that Russia will be seeking to achieve greater influence in Libya here again through economic interests, but also through the establishment, perhaps, of a political process outside the auspices of the UN, and therefore one which Russia will have much greater influence over. And here we might see similar dynamics as those on display in Syria.
Tim Eaton, thank you for joining me at the Media Line. I'm Lawrence Rifkin.